Welcome to the Student Athlete Preparation Podcast, brought to you by Simply Faster, the industry's leading sports technology and coach education platform. Check out all their products and their coaching blog at simplyfaster.com. That's SimplyFaster.com. Today, I'm sitting down with just me, by myself. You're going to get full-blown, vulnerable story of my life. So, today you get me and me alone, Cody Hughes.
Countdown.
Welcome to the Student Athlete Preparation Podcast, hosted by high school strength and conditioning coach, Cody Hughes. This ain't your normal podcast, y'all. He's bringing real discussions about real strategies to improve the student athlete development and preparation process. New episodes every Friday with guests who are all about keeping it real. It'll warn you now. You might get your feelings hurt. The mics are on and the takes are hot. Enjoy this episode. Here's your host, Cody Hughes.
Well, good Friday to everybody. I hope you guys are having a wonderful Friday here. We've made it to June. All you coaches out there are probably getting rolling on your summer training programs and high school sports are rolling back again as things are starting to open back up and things are starting to look a little normal again. And that's awesome. I'm glad we're finally seeing that happen, especially for our kids. It's really good. But today's a special episode. Not going to be your typical interview that you get from, you know, from a coach in the field or a mentor of mine where we cover a certain topic. Today, I wanted to share my story because at the end of the day, it's really easy to get people mixed up with an Instagram or a Twitter handle, who they've become. Coach Schofield called it an entity, right? When he mentioned a few episodes ago, I believe he was episode 3, that he got lost in Coach Sco and forgot Gary Schofield. It made me think, you know what? I need to make sure that doesn't happen to myself. So I decided that what I wanted you guys to get to know me a little better and not just know me as Cody the coach or the social media presence or the guy who, you know, offers training templates and stuff like that. I want you to know me as me, as a person, so we can remove some of the strength and conditioning side of it so you can know who I am. And I think that's important because at the end of the day, I'm in this business to connect with people. That's why I do this podcast. It's why I do what I do. It's why I share what I do is I want to connect with people and I want to help people. And I think that it's really hard to help anybody if you try to make it look great all the time. If you don't share hardships, if you're not somewhat transparent. Now, of course, there are some things about everybody's life that is not needed to be out in the open. It's not meant to be for everybody else to hear. And that's okay. But if you sit in this podcast, you know, you're probably almost 4 minutes in now. For the next hour, you'll get to know me a lot better. And that's my goal, is I want you to know where I came from, why I act the way I am, my personality, who my parents are, you know, where I met my wife, where is my journey? What has happened in my life thus far to get where I'm at? And I think that's super important. So we're going to start from the very beginning. I was born June 12th, 93 in Enterprise, Alabama. And birthday's coming up. I'll be 28 in a week or so, a week and a half. And guys, I'm not very old. You know, for those of you that don't know me personally, I'm 28 years old. I'm married with a wife and a kid and a toddler who will turn 2 this Sunday on the 6th. And we live in Huntsville, Alabama currently. I was born, like I said, in Enterprise, Alabama, which for those of you not familiar with the South or Alabama as a state in general, it's in the lower part of Alabama, also known as LA, as people in Alabama like to consider it, where it's pretty rural, you know, down in Enterprise, still got family down there. Grandparents still live close to there. But My story's interesting because I was not brought into this world typically. I didn't have parents that were happily married and in their first home, and that's not how it happened. My dad was a musician growing up, and my dad is my biggest hero, and I hope he listens to this because I fully mean it, and he will always be that. But he was a musician growing up, and he wanted to chase his dream of being a country artist, and he almost did. He started playing gigs as early as 14 years old, and very gifted piano player, singer, and guitar player. And, you know, one of those nights changed his life forever when, he found out that he got somebody pregnant and didn't really know if I was his or not. That was a scary part. And my dad was 17 years old at the time. 17 going through that. And I can't imagine being a 17-year-old and having that life-changing moment and having a decision of what to do. So from there, you know, I actually asked my grandparents, and I don't know if my dad even knows this, but I asked my granddad one day, like, hey, how did my dad respond to that? Like, did you guys really have to, you know, let him know that, hey, like, this is your priority now. You don't get to just walk away from this. And one of the most proudest moments is when my granddad looked at me and said, no. He immediately shifted his focus. And that's what makes me so proud today, because my mom was barely in the picture. I'm not in contact with my mom to this day, and I'll explain that. But my dad decided to change paths, and he's told me a couple times that he believes that if it wasn't for me, he may have been somewhere on drugs, dead in a ditch, because he was living a fast life. And he decided to pivot and help provide for me, which is big for me. And that right there sets the tone for my life and why I believe he's my biggest hero. Flash forward a little bit. My mom was in my life up until I was about 5 years old. There was split custody. You know, my dad was working full time. And then eventually my dad, moved to Auburn, Alabama to start school. He went to junior college on a music scholarship. And after his 2 years at the junior college, was looking for scholarship money and got some scholarship money to go be in the engineering program in Auburn. So he moved up there, and all the while he's dating this lady named Athena, who he was actually dating or had been dating when I was born. And you can put two and two together there. She was in my life from the beginning as well. And I've been very fortunate to have her, but my dad moved to Auburn. You know, I was with him the whole time, and my dad was working anywhere from nights at the mill, playing gigs on the weekend, still playing music, doing what he loves, going to school during the day and finding a way to feed me. And he'll tell you a lot. There was a lot of help along the way, but the way that he put his himself last and worked harder than anybody I'd ever known to get where he's at today is a lot what drives me to do what I do. And it wasn't an easy life, you know, but I never wanted for anything. If you look at it from the outside, people will think, wow, like that was rough. As a kid, I had no idea. I thought I had everything. I never really felt like I wanted for much or envied other kids. Started school. You know, I still lived close to my mom there. I was all the way to second grade at the time, still living in Enterprise. And my dad was, you know, at that time, I believe he's out of school. He's working and as an engineer. Athena's still in the picture. They got married, I think, when I was, golly, I was probably four, 97, three, four, five. Yeah, when I was 4 years old. I'm about to turn four, so they're married. She's my stepmom. Living in Enterprise, and after the second grade, I remember my dad telling me, like, hey, we're moving. I was like, okay, where are we moving to? And they said, Phenix City. And I was always a big Auburn fan growing up because that's where my dad went to. You know, he took me to games, and we watched games. We're big sports fans, and I was playing ball, playing, you know, coach pitch baseball, Little League. You know, I was 7 or 8 years old at the time, flag football, basketball, you name it. I was playing all of it. I was a three-sport athlete early. And he said, we're moving. He said, Phenix City. And I was like, where is that? And he looked at me and says, 30 minutes from Auburn. And I got stupid geeked out about it because I loved the Auburn Tigers, man. I was 100% obsessed with Auburn. And as you guys, if you really know that I'm still an Auburn fan to this day. So we moved to Phoenix City, which is, if you're looking at the map, it's about 2.5 hours north of Enterprise, still on the very east side of Alabama, east central, kind of east south central. So if you look at the state on the east side, there's like a little point that kind of changes direction on the map right there on the border of Georgia. That's where Phoenix City lies. It's about 30 minutes from Auburn. And we moved there, and that's where I grew up. So my hometown is Phoenix City, Alabama. That's where I was at, and that's still where my parents are at. They don't live in Phoenix City anymore. They live in Columbus, Georgia, which is right across the river, but same community that they live in to this day. So we made that move when I was in the third grade. I want to say 2003. Is that 2002? Something like that. Or maybe, no, I think it was 2001, actually, is when we moved. Got into a school system and started playing Little League. And that's where we connected with people in our new town, is through sports. And I think that I'll probably go through the same thing with my kids as well. Made some friends, and, you know, I'm currently going into one school system. I go through it fourth, fifth, sixth grade, going through youth sports. And youth sports was a lot of fun. I was mostly a baseball buff, where I played. You know, I was really good in Little League baseball. We won 2 state championships in Little League. I got to play in the Little League regional, where we were, if we would have won 2 more games, would have had a chance to play in the championship and had a chance to go to Williamsport for the Little League World Series. Got to play in that, which was really great. Still playing basketball, still playing tackle football. And it got to a point where my dad approached me about something, and he said, look, we're thinking about moving your school systems. And at the end of the day, like, I won't go into a lot of detail, but it was a really good move for me. And everybody will say that I made that move athletically. And I think that's part of it, but it wasn't the biggest part. And when I made the move in school systems, I was in the sixth grade. My dad held me back, and I did sixth grade twice. I was really young because I was projected for the 2011 class, but I was the youngest guy in the grade. And I was also hanging around somebody that my dad did a really good job of foreshadowing and seeing that it wasn't really the best group. So I wanted to change environments for me, and it was one of the best things he ever did. So I changed to literally the rival school system that was a lot better athletically, but the friend group that I was going to be in was one that I already had through sports, and it was just a much better crowd that I needed to be with. So I made that change, did sixth grade twice, and then we started middle school sports. Now here's the thing about my athletic journey and where this starts. I started my athletic journey in youth sports. You know, I was a bigger kid. I hit puberty really early. I was bigger than everybody. I wasn't really fast, but I was stronger than everybody. I was pretty athletic. And in youth football, I'd always played line or linebacker. You know, I really never really or defensive end, never really played a skill position. Baseball, I was a corner, first baseman, third baseman. I'd pitch, obviously, or play corner outfield. And from there, that's when middle school sports started, and I wanted to make a change. And before I go into that, there was a key moment in my life that happened about 3 years before that changed things forever for me, that I forgot to mention. When we moved to Phoenix City, the custody changed with my mom, and they agreed upon me going and seeing them 1 weekend a month. I believe, I could be wrong, it was so long ago, I was 9 or 10 years old, but she lived in Albany, Georgia, and we lived in Phoenix City. It's a nice little drive. We'd always have a place we'd meet in the middle. And I'll never forget the day. I'll never forget this day where we're driving to meet at this nice, like, truck stop gas station, like a Love's truck stop equivalent. We're supposed to meet at like 7, and we stayed there until like 11:30 at night, and she never showed up. And I didn't understand. I cried my eyes out. My dad didn't have an explanation for me. And that happened when I was 9 years old. And I didn't hear from her again until the moment I was just talking about, when I turned 12. And I was getting ready to go into middle school, or a year before that, and changing after sixth grade, changing schools. I didn't hear from him until my 12th birthday. And I got a birthday card from her on my 12th birthday, and in that card was some not very nice things to tell a 12-year-old, trying to, you know, start things. And my dad handled that beautifully. He put a stop to that pretty quick, and it kind of got to a point where things went back and forth with my mom. Fast forward a little bit, didn't hear from her until I was 12. That was not pretty. She wanted to come watch me play baseball in high school when I was a sophomore. She did once. Didn't hear from her again. Graduation in high school, she got offended that she didn't get invited. Didn't hear from her again. College graduation, same thing. And it got to a point where I decided I just feel like she didn't exist anymore. And that's a really hard decision. And I made that decision personally because I had a mom. Her name was Athena, my stepmom. She's my mother. And she's fulfilled that role better than anybody ever could, doing anything and everything for me. Still will to this day. On call, she'd drop everything right now to do anything for me, and I'm so blessed to have her in my life to love me the way she did. She is my mother. Like, people ask me if we're blood, I'm willing to say yes, because that's how close we are. But that moment was huge for me, and I still had a struggle with that because my mom somewhat abandoned me and tried to make up for it, but not with much effort at all, and blamed. And that played a huge part in who I am as a person just through growing up and now being an adult. So flashback forward to where we were when I did sixth grade twice, transferred schools, got into a new friend group. I had 1 year of Little League football left because my birthday was late. Same thing with baseball. So I did sixth grade twice, but I still had another year of Little League. So it made perfect sense. I didn't have to sit out of school ball. My dad calls it redshirting me. That's what he calls it. And had a really successful that year, and got to be on a team in Little League football with some good friends of ours. Actually, a guy that I'm going to his wedding this weekend, his name's Paul Waldrop. And he's about to go into residency to be an orthopedic surgeon, one of the smartest guys I've ever met. Played football at Alabama. But I was on his team in Little League, and then a good buddy of mine, Luke Wilson, who was on the other team. So I was on the Cowboys, and he was on the Packers. And we practiced against each other every day. But our dads were all the coaches. And that was one of the best things, looking back on it, as a Little League coach, of like having two teams kind of practice together OTA style. Then we had enough numbers to scrimmage at the end. At the end of the day, you looked at it, almost looked like a scripted high school practice. Scaled down, obviously. And it was good. And after that, you know, my dad was always like, hey, like, you know, I want you to start working out. You know, we got to get up. If you really want to be serious in this, you're going into seventh grade training. We got to start working out. Because my buddy Luke and his dad David were workout fanatics. And Luke was one of the strongest guys. No, you didn't mess with Luke. That's the thing. Luke was yoked up. Everybody said that he would do push-ups for popsicles when he was 5 years old. You know, he went on to play college football at Shorter University and was a three-year starter as a middle linebacker. I did not like hitting that guy in practice all the way up through high school. But I'll never forget, in the sixth grade, you know, we'd have when I was in the sixth grade, during, you know, if we had practice later in the evening, but what we would do is we would ride the bus from the middle school to the high school, and me and Luke and Paul, we were ball boys for the high school team, high school football team. So we would, you know, go up to the school, help out with that type of stuff, and then we would wait on Mr. David, Luke's dad, to show up, get off from work, take us into the high school weight room and work us out. And I'll never forget my first day doing that. Never forget it. And they wanted to show me, you know, a couple of key things we were going to work on. And the first thing they showed me as a 12-year-old was the power clean. And I'll never forget it. We had the first weight we tried was 95 pounds as a 12-year-old. There was a 25 on each side. I'll never forget it. 25-pound metal plate on the ground, and he tried to explain it to me. And when I tried to do it, if you know the motion of the clean, like, I fell backwards and on my back, and that bar came inches within landing on my face, and I pushed it off, and it scared me and scarred me, and I never wanted to do it again. that was my first experience working out. And then from there, that's what we did. You know, a couple of days a week, we'd work out with Mr. David, and I hated every second of it, just to be honest. Hated it. Hated training. It was brutal for me. It was hard. I was not gifted at it. I was very much not gifted on the conditioning side of things. It was a challenge for me and still is to this day, was through my entire career. And eventually they got us to catch the bug of going during the school year in the eighth grade, seventh and eighth grade, like going to the YMCA in the mornings. No, that's before that. Sixth and seventh grade, going to the YMCA in the mornings at 4:30 a.m. and working out and continuing that. So that's like where my physical culture started, was doing that with Mr. David. And my dad got involved, and that was good, and always trying to keep up with those guys, but they were always way more intense and more physical than me. And then you got into school ball, right? Seventh grade, eighth grade. I wanted to change things up because, like I said before, I always played line in Little League, but man, I always wanted to be a quarterback my entire life. I loved the quarterback position. I thought the quarterback was the man. Like, man, I have a good arm because I'm a baseball player, always had a gifted arm. Like, I want to play quarterback. So in seventh grade, you know, you try out for the seventh grade team and you get on, and they put you through all these drills, and depth chart gets put up for the seventh grade team, and I am third string quarterback. And I was devastated. Like, man, third string. Like, that's brilliant. But I got to figure out a way, right? I got to figure out a way to make it happen. And big, a lot of I'm really thankful for my dad, because my dad always taught me to compete. That kind of stuff isn't on nobody but me. Like, there's a reason why you're third string. You've got to work at it. You've got to go to work, put in some work, and find a way to get better. I mean, so we did, you know, and worked really hard that seventh grade football season, and got to a point where our starter, so our first string guy was really talented. Second string guy was more of a defensive player, but was a little bit bigger than me. And then there was me. And then once our starter got hurt, the defensive guy had a main role in defense, but they saw so much improvement in me that they were going to give me the start of a game that our starting quarterback, his name was Jonathan, had to sit out. They had to give him a week off. And I did really well, you know, that was exhilarating for me. I got to play quarterback, got to win. We won the game, had a touchdown pass, a lot of fun, right? Moved to eighth grade, you know, in seventh grade, we were pretty good. I think we went 6-2. Moved to eighth grade football because mostly this football journey is what helped me. I was a baseball player, but middle school baseball wasn't really all that exciting. So there's not a whole lot of story there. So actually, let's back up. Seventh grade football. Then we move into seventh grade basketball, because remember, I was a three-sport athlete. And going from there to basketball tryouts, and I'll never forget, we had tryouts and they literally just let us play pickup. And all I loved to do in basketball was shoot, man. And just to give you guys some context, I went to about a 90% black high school. I think I was one of two white guys at the tryouts, seventh grade tryouts. And I was used to that because I played in a youth league that was very similar. And I had to find a way to hang. And I'll never forget, first trip down the floor, came off a pick to the corner, caught it, shoot it, nothing but net, corner three. And the coach, hey, what's your name? And next thing I know, my name was posted on the wall that I made the team. Ended up being a starter by the end of the year. Went 10-0 in basketball that year. We were really good. And that was a lot of fun. It was really cool moments for me in gyms that, you know, hey, that white boy can hoop a little bit. And that I really hung my hat on that. You know, that's kind of how I fit in. You know, I could hang with those guys. A lot of athletes in that town. So that was good. Seventh grade baseball was good. Moved forward to eighth grade year, football team. Now, and I really wanted to challenge Jonathan for the job. Man, I didn't have a shot because he was that good. But we were so talented that year that they saw that they wanted to put me on the field. So really, they created packages for us. And Jonathan would line up at running back because he was gifted. He could run. He was physical. He would line up at running back. We ran the wing T, and I would play quarterback sometimes too. They'd move him back to quarterback. Really hard to defend as an eighth grade program. And we had a lot of success that year. We went 8-0, went undefeated, won the city championship, have a banner with our names on it in the eighth grade gym still. And that was a lot of fun. And I thought, and I played a lot more that year than ever. You know, I threw a few touchdowns. It was great. And I really enjoyed that. And I mean, I never thought at one moment I was better than Jonathan or like, man, I want to take his job. But I was going to compete hard and try to help our team win. And that's a big ups to my parents for helping me understand that. Moved to ninth grade. You moved to the high school. There wasn't a freshman school then. There is now, but there wasn't a freshman school there. Then we were in high school, ninth grade. I keep skipping basketball. Go back. Eighth grade basketball. Okay. Eighth grade basketball. I went from being a starter and then the talent gets better. And my eighth grade year, I was about the sixth man. Still on the team, you know, contributing, not as much, but did my best. And we were really good, that year. We didn't go undefeated, but I think we only lost two or three games and we played 20. We were really good that year. Moved to ninth grade year, like I said, football. And, you know, I went to Central Phoenix City High School is where I went to high school. They won the state championship back in 2018. They're 7A, the biggest classification in Alabama. Pretty big school. So when you look at the football program, we have a JV team, which is the freshman team. Ninth grade team. JV is just the ninth grade team. Then you had a B team, which was like your 10th graders didn't really get a lot of reps on varsity. And then you had your varsity. Well, after winning the ninth grade, head coach of our varsity squad decided to pull Jonathan up to be the backup on the varsity immediately, as deserved, 100%. And I was jealous of it. I really was. But I had an opportunity to be a full-time quarterback in JV. And that was the year that kind of solidified to me that I was a horrible leader. That, you know, I always heard, like, you need to lead from the front, lead, lead, lead. And all I really understood at that point was like, it was all about me. I wanted the shine. I wanted the spotlight on me. I wanted things to be about me. I wanted the spotlight so bad. And it didn't, like, everybody else didn't matter. I wanted that. And went 5-3 as a ninth grader. Was really competitive. I hated to lose, but also was really easy to shift blame. I think I'm 15 years old at this time, and I would shift blame really quickly. Like if something happened, broke down, I got sacked, I would yell at my line. Really terrible things. I mean, I lost a lot of respect, I think, from my teammates and my friends by the way I acted, because you could easily tell that I was just wanting things to be for me. And Jonathan moved up and played on the varsity, but I had a chance to dress for the varsity, and because they needed somebody to hold field goals. They didn't have anybody that had good hands, and I played baseball. And I took pride in it. I worked at it really hard because I wanted to wear that jersey on Friday night so bad, and got to do that my freshman year. I got to play on Monday nights for freshman football as a starting quarterback, and then I got to hold field goals, held every field goal my freshman year, every snap for every field goal and extra point, which was good. And I'll never forget, we were on the road playing Dothan or Northview, one of those two teams before they merged. Really close game, 35-yard field goal, run out there. I'm a freshman, and I dropped a snap. And I wanted to run to the other sideline because it was such a big, big play, and I screwed it up. And that was the last snap I ever dropped because I held field goals from ninth grade to 12th grade the entire time. And just really started working hard at sports at that point. You know, in ninth grade, went to basketball. At the end of my JV football season, though, I got hurt. First time really getting hurt. We were in a wildcat formation. I was blocking on the edge, got rolled up, dislocated my knee pretty nasty. Thought I tore my ACL. MRI came back negative, but was a pretty nasty, probably about a four-month recovery from a hard knee dislocation. A lot of rehab. And I missed out on an opportunity to get ready for basketball. And getting ready for ninth grade basketball, I did my best and got to a point where I could make the team, but I was if we had 12 guys on the team, I was number 13. Like, I was the cheerleader. I got in at trash time because I just couldn't run with those guys. I was already a challenge in conditioning, and when it came to the rehab stuff, man, I'll be honest, I was not really working all that hard, cutting corners, having to do extra work for conditioning for basketball. Yeah, you can save that. It was not happening. I hated it. And you, this, that, that will continue as a pattern the rest of my life as you hear this. And then, got hurt. So that was my last year of basketball. My dad didn't like the fact I was giving it up, or didn't like the fact the way I communicated. I kind of just told him, "Hey, Dad, I'm not playing basketball anymore." Like, we didn't have the conversation. He was like, told me how I should have communicated that better. But ninth grade baseball is where things really started to pick up, because I got pulled up to varsity in baseball my freshman year and became a starter. Started first base, hitting five in the lineup, had one of the biggest hits of the year. We had a new head coach that year that came in full blazing from the college ranks, where, because our baseball team was garbage before that, won three games on the varsity my eighth grade year. Our eighth grade team was really good. Coach Hemmings came in from a junior college and brought a JUCO mentality, and it was rough on a lot of people because it was so different. And part of our warm up every day for baseball was we had to run two laps around the field. And like I said, I hated conditioning, and that was probably the worst part of my day. I dreaded it every day. Two laps, man. It ain't that big of a deal, but I hated it. And from there, had a really successful year. And became a starter that year. And then started getting serious with it. Following year, between my ninth and 10th grade summer, a big event happened. A pretty serious event. Two things happened. One that changed my life forever, in my opinion, and has had a lot of impact on me. I turned 16. I was the first guy to start driving in my class. I turned 16, got a car between my ninth and 10th grade year in June. Everybody wanted to ride with me. I had all the speakers in the back and did all this stuff and loved it and all that. And I'll never forget. I went up to the field to hit one day, and I got a call, saying that. So a girl named Stephanie Palmer had passed away in a car accident. She was a cheerleader. She was in my class. I had a huge crush on her. That was the first time I ever had somebody like a friend like that pass away. And it really, really had an effect on me. Really tough to deal with at that age. Not sure how to process that. And that was difficult. Having somebody close, like I was really close to her, somebody that I secretly had a crush on, but was really good friends with, sat with in class all the time. That was pretty shell shocking at that point. And the same year, I got a little more privileged and everything. And I had a really close friend growing up. His name was Colton. And Colton had a hard home life. He had a single mom parent, didn't have a dad that was around. Mom was doing everything she could to make ends meet. She was a firefighter, EMT, all kind of, things like that. Worked for EMS as a medic. So she worked weird hours. So he always stayed the night with us. And, he ended up, when I transferred schools, he ended up staying at the other school. So we were still really close friends, just not as close because we weren't in the same school system like we were when we were younger. But this summer, the next event that happened, I had a car to drive. I had a curfew when I was 16 of 11 o'clock. My parents decided to go I believe it was for their anniversary, to go stay in a hotel, and they wanted some time away, which as a parent now, I 100% understand. And my dad told me, "You're going to stay at home. You can bring one friend to stay with you. But I better not hear a phone call from you. Like, do not bother us." I said, okay. And I decided to let Colton come stay. And the first thing we talked about was like, all right, what party are we going to? Like, what are we doing? We can pull this off. Not here though, because I'm not doing that. I'm not taking that risk. I'm not going to trash my parents' house. What party are we going to? We're jazzed up. We're so excited. We can't wait. Parents aren't going to be home, so we can stay out late as long as we don't get in trouble. And Colton and I found a party, and we go, and I'm 16. And guys, I'm going to tell you this. I was a good kid, man. I'd been in church from the very beginning, very active church member, very active in the youth group, stayed out of trouble, mostly because I was absolutely scared to death of my dad, like heavy fear of my dad. At that point, because he scared the crap out of me, and for good reasons. So I was a pretty good kid, stayed in line, but I really wanted a taste for that fast life. I really did, and wanted it really bad. 16 years old, of course you do. chasing girls and wanting to hang out, wanting to do all that. Well, we go to this party and we're hanging out and everything seems fine. And all of a sudden, Colton gets dragged off with a group of guys kind of off, and they're kind of huddled up outside, you know, away from the group. And I didn't know what was going on. So I walked down there and joined in, and they've got lighters in their hands, and I smell this odor. I wasn't sure what it was. And at that point in time, like, I was like super, super nervous immediately because I'd never been around marijuana before. Kind of my first time ever being around it and seeing it. And it scared the crap out of me immediately. I was like, we've got to leave. We can't do this. This is horrible. This is illegal. We're in the wrong group. This is not good. And Colton's like, no, it's not a big deal. It's no big deal. Like, dude, it's fine. Like do this all the time. And I was like, well, you're not doing this with me. Like, I'm not having it. And he was like, well, you can leave if you want, but I'm not leaving. And I was like, well, I have no choice. I have to remove myself from this place. And I said, dude, like, let me know if I need to come pick you up. And he said, yeah, man, I'll just get a ride. I'll catch a ride. You know, one of my friends will take me back to your house. And I said, okay. Well, I end up finding another spot that people were hanging out at, staying out late. Hadn't heard from Colton. I get home late at night. And then I think it was around 12:30 or 1, still hadn't heard from Colton. I'm not sure what's going on. And my phone rings, and on the phone it says dad at 12:30 in the morning. My throat swelled up to a point that I thought that I'd just rather die. I'd rather die. Why am I getting a call from my dad? And when I panicked as a kid, I lied like a rug. Denied, lied, played dumb. Called me. Hey, son, where you at? I'm at home. He's like, you with Colton? No, sir. You know, he's like, do you know where he's at? And I was like, I don't know. And we started talking, and I was just like, I don't know, dad. I don't know where he's at. I don't know. I don't know. We went over to a friend's house, and he said he'd get a ride back and blah, blah, blah. Well, he told me, turns out he had been arrested for getting caught, you know, hotboxing on the side of the road. And then he had gotten arrested. And for, you know, weed possession and all that. And my dad was furious. And you would think that I did the right thing by getting out of that situation. But my dad taught me a lesson there that I'll never forget. And he's like, son, your actions will always influence other people. And you did not do a good job of taking care of your friend. I was like, I got out of there though. Like I got out of the environment. I don't care. Look at the end result. Like, you didn't do a good enough job. So that summer was one of the hardest summers of my life. I didn't have a car. My dad set up a brutal schedule for me. That's, I didn't go anywhere. I didn't do anything. Where I, for like 8 straight weeks, this is what my schedule looked like. I had to get up early in the morning, run a mile. Then I had yard work to do, landscaping work, which was brutal. I hated it at 16 years old, turned to 28. I love it now, of trying to fix our yard. Wasn't allowed to come in. I'd come in, eat lunch, and my dad would have a huge stack of math problems for me to solve. Because that's no fun, right? Like, hey, if I'm gonna punish you, I'm gonna make you get smarter. So I would just do math on math on math problems because my dad's an engineer and super smart, and I would just do these worksheets and all these projects. And in the summer, man, like you gotta get away from all this academic stuff. But it taught me a valuable lesson there, and that stuck with me. Moving on, going into sophomore year. High school, you know, I didn't play much, played on the B team. I was a butt in football. So football wasn't really eventful. Didn't play basketball. And then my sophomore baseball season is where things really started to take off. I started as a starter in baseball, hit 3-hole, ended up with 7 home runs, 41 RBIs, hit like 407 that year and started to get some looks, started to get some attention from some people. And that summer, I went to a couple camps, and that's when I started thinking I was a hotshot, right? D1, possible draft prospect. No, I wasn't. I was not a draft prospect at all. I threw 85, 86 and had a decent, could hit pretty well. Went to a camp. One of the heaviest interests I had at the time was from Georgia. So I went to their camp, and I think I barely put a ball in play and had a guy hit two home runs off me off the bump, off the mound. Had a horrible camp. And that kind of solidified that for me. So I had a really good sophomore year, baseball wise, turnaround junior year for football in high school. You know, at that point I had a decision to make because Jonathan became the full-time starter and they had to ask me, okay, look, you know, you're not going to play quarterback. We're not going to play a two quarterback system because Jonathan's that good. And that's true. And I was just like, well, where can I help the team? And I was really physical. That's one thing that I really took pride in football is that I really loved contact at that point. Really loved to run guys over. People would call me, nickname me Tebow because I really loved to. I had one move. It was straightforward. I had no lateral quickness, elusiveness. It wasn't happening, so you might as well run people over. And they wanted me to try to play linebacker, but goodness gracious, I could not figure out how to tackle to save my life. Couldn't figure it out. So decided to put me at tight end. And I played a lot of different roles. I still held field goals. I played on kickoff return. I was the punter. I played tight end. I'd line up at running back in certain situations for pass protection. I would line up in the slot. We'd do wildcat quarterback short yardage situations where we didn't want to get Jonathan hurt, but I could run it. That was kind of my role for the next 2 years. And Jonathan was really good. He ended up signing with Auburn. He was really good. He's actually the running backs coach at Kansas now. Jonathan Wallace is his name. And the thing about Jonathan is he was one of the greatest leaders I've still ever been around. Handled himself with serious humility, outworked everybody. And when he spoke, people's ears perked. And he was also the best performer on the team. Hardest worker, best performer. There's a reason why we were really good. In my senior year, we had a really good year of sports. We went to the Final Four in football and baseball and got beat both times, but it was really good. When my recruiting started to pick up, this is a really interesting and a very important time in my life. In between my junior and senior year that summer, I had two visits that I could go because at that time is when you can officially get offered for baseball. And I had interest from three schools, Jacksonville State University, Division I in Alabama, University of Montevallo, Division II in Birmingham, Alabama, and Chattahoochee Valley Community College, local junior college, who was actually a powerhouse, went to the World Series multiple times. Offer from junior college, didn't really want that. My dad talked to me. We talked about it. If I had an opportunity to go to a four-year school and have a great experience, I wanted to do that. So I did, and kind of scratched the junior college route off the list because I was pretty decent academically. I made a 25 on my ACT. Had some academic money at both Jacksonville State and University of Montevallo. But dad was like, hey, we need to take visits. So that summer, we did both. And I'll never forget, we were actually driving up to a lake vacation in North Alabama, stopped by Montevallo on the way in and for my visit. And this was the first visit. And at this point, I thought, I'm too good for D2. Literally thought that. Like, I'm finna roll up in here. Like, I'm the best player on their recruiting board. Like, they need me. You know, like, this team needs me. Like, you're gonna have to win me over type deal. Cockiest approach I could ever have. And I would never say that out loud because my dad would slap the crap out of me. But that's kind of how I felt. And we rolled up at Montevallo in July, I believe. And this is the first visit I had, and they showed me around, and the field kind of looked like crap. But keep in mind, it's July. It's not supposed to look good in July. It never does. That's like the lifespan of keeping up with field maintenance. But I didn't get that. And, you know, they showed me around, took us to lunch, sat us down in the office, and slapped down their offer. Boom. This is what we're going to offer you. We think that you're a big piece to our puzzle. You're number one on our recruiting board to help us. This is where I think you can help us. You're a two-way player. You pitched and you hit. We think you can do both here and give you that opportunity. We think you can play early if you earn it. And we'll give you $10,000 a year to do it. And I never understood in baseball terms, people talking about getting, I've got 50% scholarship, 25%. I was never given those terms. I was given a dollar amount, you know, and I had about $4,000 a year in academic money, both baseball at Jacksonville State and at Montevallo. So looked at it like $14,000 a year at a public in-state school. It's pretty good. So it's about as close to a full ride as you could get. And that was a pretty good offer. Well, we left Montevallo and I'm on my way up. This was 2011. I was on our way up to the lake. And guys, this is when I downloaded my Twitter and I created an account, I believe February of 2011. This is July. And back then I probably had 22 followers, something stupid from the very beginning. Twitter was very, you know, brand new. And I tweeted out, just left Montevallo, not impressed. And thought nothing of it, right? Literally putting that out there in social media in the early days of social media. Well, thankfully, my dad had one too and followed me. And he found that tweet while we were at the lake with our family. And I thought he was going to kill me. He literally brought me down to the basement and said, I hope Montevallo finds that, calls you back, and takes away every dollar they just presented to you because that's ridiculous. Like, that is cocky. That's not being grateful. None of that. That's ridiculous. Like, you need to erase that immediately, and you need to evaluate where you think on this process, because that's an opportunity that is unbelievable. So I did. I mean, I wasn't really sure on how to change my mindset on that at the moment. But what happened was, fast forward to fall, my senior year, took a visit to Jacksonville State because they like to bring you on visits during football season because they have a good football team and they take you down and get to hang out in places to try to woo you a little bit. Well, sit down in the head coach's office there, slap down the offer, very similar Montevallo, very similar money terms. So as far as money goes, it was a very similar offer. And I asked a question. I was like, I've been told I'm a two-way player. How do you, and I asked the head coach, how do you think that I fit in to your program? And then he said, I don't know. I mean, you throw 92 from the outfield and you run a decent 60 and you got some pop. You know, you're competitive on the mound. I don't know. We'll see. And very kind of just standoffish. Those guys only called me twice, saw me at one showcase, and that's how the visit went. I would have walked out that building as a 17, 18 year old, knowing that if I would have committed on my own, I would have committed to Jacksonville State and said, because it's D1, I get to play Auburn, I get to play Alabama, I get to play Samford, I get to do all that. I'm going to commit here because it's D1. It's obviously better. It's D1, it's not D2. Well, I'll never forget the conversation I had with my dad about, let's break this down. Like, the guy that's recruiting you at Montevallo came and watched you play football, texts you when he can, reaches out to you, asks you how you are, wants you a ton. They mapped out a plan. Jacksonville, you haven't heard anything from Jacksonville State. Why would you not want to go where you're wanted? Why do you not want to go where you're a better fit? Do you think you could go to Jacksonville State and get lost in the weeds? Or do you think you're better than you actually are? And that was a big conversation that we had. And I made the decision to commit to D2 and go to Montevallo. And everybody either thought one of two things. One, I was crazy, or two, that my actual offer at Jacksonville State wasn't legit, because obviously you don't commit D2 over D1. And I signed and everything. And to be honest, in the back of my head, I was like, I guess, but like, I'm better than that. You know, like, I'm better than that. And it bled into all the way that summer, getting ready to prep to go to college. And, you know, we lost my senior year in the Final Four in baseball, and then started getting ready to prepare to go to college. And one thing that Montevallo's coaches told me was, okay, we have a conditioning test when you get here. You have to run a mile and a half in under 10 minutes. And if you don't pass it on the first day, you have to run it every Wednesday morning at 6 a.m. the whole fall until you do. And when you think about strength conditioning terms for a baseball player, it's pretty ridiculous. Like I said, I already really struggled on the conditioning side. I was not good at it. I had a really big gas tank. I mean, a really big engine with a really small gas tank, and I refused to work on it. That's the problem, is I refused to work on it. It was a huge weakness, and I hated training it so much, I refused to work on it. Well, my dad, first thing after they told us that, my dad took me down to the track and timed me. First time I ever ran it, it was 12 minutes, 45 seconds. I mean, I'm 2 minutes and 45 seconds off. It's a long time. He's like, all right, there's your benchmarker. You need to work at it. And he was like, he wasn't going to hold my hand. He wasn't going to make me do anything. It's up to me. I had to make the decision. Well, guess what I didn't do? I didn't train it at all. And I was talking myself into thinking, oh, if I just go really hard, I can pass it. I show up first day at Montevallo, and I'm not going to lie, my mindset going into Montevallo was that I'm already the best player on the team because I had a D1 offer. Like, they're lucky to have me. I'm better than everybody. And that kind of egotistical, but I was also a high, high competitor. Like, I competed all the time, competed hard, hated to lose. So it was kind of a two-way street, and it ended up going back to bite me. And the first day of the mile and a half, like, I had my beats on. I was ready to go. I was showing out. And when they blew the whistle to run, I took off. Took off and was way out in front of everybody, which was the worst mistake I could ever make. And I think I ended up running it in like 13:30 because I was so tired. And I basically waddled to the finish line and looked like a fool because I really tried to gas myself up that, like, oh, I'm going to knock this out, no problem. And then I looked like a fool. And immediately, every one of my teammates thought, oh, this guy. And it took a long time in college for me to figure that out. That I wasn't as good as I thought I was. But I saw a lot of success early. You know, my freshman year, this is how my freshman year of college went sports-wise. We had the fall. And you had an opportunity in the fall. You know, you play a few games, scrimmage a few guys, trying to see where you're at. And they told me I had a chance to play early. So I took that to heart and said, okay, let's do it. And I actually had a great fall. I earned the starting spot to play first base or right field or DHing opening weekend. We're going to Tampa, Florida opening weekend against St. Leo University, and I'm in the lineup, game one, true freshman. And they also said, be ready because you're also going to close for us on the mound. Like, if we need you, we want to bring you in late in the game to close the deal. True freshman now. And it's like, great, let's do it. And guys, the pitching side worked out, but the hitting side didn't. I went 0-for-28 with 14 strikeouts to start my college career and end it. Actually ended 1-for-29. The last at bat I had was a pinch hit, dink hit over the second baseman's head to say I have one hit in college baseball. It was brutal, man, because guys knew how to pitch at that level. And it really opened my eyes then of like, man, like, okay, I'm not as good as I thought I was. These dudes know how to pitch. They are college baseball players. But I had a lot of success on the mound. I had 9 saves my freshman year. The school record was 11. And I would have broken it, I believe, if I didn't have to miss 3 straight weeks of baseball because of another dumb mistake that I made. During the season, we have a spring break trip planned every year, and we were supposed to go up to Indiana and play Southern Indiana. But the snow was so bad up there, they canceled on us. So we ended up staying on campus and didn't have any games. We had a whole week of spring break where we were practicing, but we were on campus. It was dead. And so we didn't have class, right? So we were trying to find ways to entertain ourselves. And I remember going in, we would play volleyball, and I love to play volleyball. And I went up for a block, and I'll never forget when Dustin hit that ball and it sprained the crap out of my thumb and to the point where I couldn't hardly grab anything. And it hurt so bad, and it was my throwing thumb. And I tried to lie to my coach and say, oh, I did it taking ground balls. And at that point, I wasn't really hitting anywhere playing in the field. So they weren't stupid. Like I said, when things would hit the storm, I would lie bad. That was a bad habit I created early as a kid. I would just lie. I hated to tell the truth. I was scared to death getting in trouble. And that carried over into my adult life. It's really bad. We'll talk about that later. And couldn't pick up a ball for 3 weeks. We ended up going to the conference tournament championship, lost 3-2. We were really close to winning a ring, but I had 9 saves. Definitely probably would have broke the school record for saves in a season. Had a lot of success that year on the mound and had a contract that summer to go play in the Northwoods League. And if you know anything about summer college baseball, it's a lot of fun. If you've heard of the Cape Cod League, that's known as the number one league. You know, that's where a lot of draft prospects go, a lot of really good, talented prospects go. But the Northwoods League was known as the second best. And it was a lot of schools, a lot of teams and players would go there. And it was based out of Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan, one team in Canada. And you would play 70 games in 75 days, much like a minor league squad. And you had guys from all over the country come play. You'd stay with a host family. So somebody would house you. You'd play every night in front of a crowd in a big stadium. You know, we'd average probably 2,000 to 3,000 people, which is a lot. You know, little D2, we might play in front of 35, and 20 of them are our parents. But we went up there, and that was a ton of fun. And drawing off of energy from the crowd, because I really loved attention, remember, from the very beginning, and drew a lot of energy from that. And I ended up being the setup guy for the Wilmer Stingers, is who I played for. You can look them up in the Northwoods League now, and had the best ERA on the team, under 2 ERA or right at it. I had like 34 innings, 36 strikeouts, 8 walks, had the best ERA on the team. I was a setup guy for our closer. I wasn't quite – I mean, I was probably 89, 91 as far as velocity goes, but our closer was 95 and really good. And I would come in a lot of times and shut things down. Had a really good year, even got selected to be in the prospects game and got named as a top 100 prospect in the league. And I was like, oh. And after that was the worst thing that could happen to me, because that is when my head blew up. I mean, absolutely blew up and turned me into the cockiest dude ever. And I went back to school the next year as a sophomore thinking I'm the man, and told everybody, well, I'm going to get drafted. So, you know, I'm a prospect, which is really stupid. And man, I was so insecure. I had such security issues growing up, and I don't know if that had a lot to do with my mom or what, but I needed people to know that I was good. And I sought that from people. And tried to be overly impressive, which is, I mean, people see through that crap. And I'll never forget a good teammate of mine I hope to have on this podcast soon. His name's Alex Jones. He's actually a college baseball coach now, but he's a son of Todd Jones, who was a longtime closer for the Detroit Tigers. And he grew up in an era and grew up around major leaguers and saw big leaguers and how they carried themselves. And he was not scared to call me out. He was a freshman. I was a sophomore. And I was like, well, I'm going to get drafted. So, and he was like, what? Like, do you have any idea what it takes to do that? And I was like, I don't need to hear from you, freshman. Like, I'm a prospect. And he kind of laughed at me, and he was right. At the end of the day, he was right. And I'm really thankful for his personality and how he carried himself. Cause he was a guy that was really into hard work and really into relationships. And I was not. I wanted all the credit. I wanted none of the relationship. I did not get real close to teammates in college. And it shows. And from there, my sophomore year, I'm training I decided no longer hit. I'm going to be a closer, you know, want to be another dominant closer. Well, second weekend of the year, our Sunday starter pops his UCL. Bam, Tommy John. Like, literally warming up for the game. Like, getting ready to warm up for the game. He's hurt. We don't have somebody to throw game three. Hughes, you're up. You're starting. I was like, what? It's like, I hadn't started a game in years. I wasn't even really a starter in high school. I was our third pitcher in high school. We had two guys throw 90 plus. I was a hitter in high school. I pitched when I had to, and went through that year and, you know, trained to throw 30 innings, end up throwing 70. And at the end of the year, I had to have elbow surgery, and I didn't have to have Tommy John, but I did have to have a screw into my olecranon, my elbow bone. It's still there to this day. And I was supposed to – I'd actually signed a contract for that summer to go pitch in Cape Cod. I was on my way to go pitch in Cape Cod, which kind of solidified you as an MLB prospect. And I had a good year, but as a starter that year, I mean, no, that contract was for me to go be a reliever because that's what I was good at. But I was a starter that year for Montevallo, ended up with a 6.5 ERA, and we were not good. We were not good. Ended up having surgery. Didn't even get to go to the conference tournament. Our team made it to the conference tournament championship and got beat again 2 years in a row. But I was home having surgery, and I had a lot of time to reflect. And while I was home, not playing summer ball, my dad's like, if you're not playing, you need to get a job. So I got a job at CVS Pharmacy, and my next thought was, I'm just missed out on a great opportunity. I had to have surgery. I'm pissed off. I got to do something about this. And I had this fire within me that absolutely just struck me. And I couldn't go hit. I mean, you know, I used to hit all the time, but I wasn't a hitter anymore. I couldn't throw. I had surgery. So what could I do? Get in the best shape of my life. And I thought, you know what? I'm not going to let this hold me back. So I absolutely fell in love with the weight room. I was Googling bodybuilding.com, reading T Nation, going to the YMCA 5 days a week before work. I was training, wanting to get in the best shape of my life. And I came back that fall in pretty good shape. I even passed a mile and a half for the first time in my career, my junior year. Was slotted to start again and had a decent year. And after my junior year, decided like I'm not going to play ball in the summer, because like usually summer ball for our coaches is to solidify like this where you're going to go to develop. And at that point, they just wanted me to rest. And I kind of understood it. Like maybe I'd get a chance to play pro ball, maybe I wouldn't. But at that point, I still needed an internship to get my undergraduate degree. And I was, at that time, I wasn't focused on school as far as career goes. Now, I was a good student. School was always easy to me. I was a 3.7 GPA. I had majored in kinesiology because I thought, I'll just do PT. You know, like, I want to work with athletes. I want to work in sport. Physical therapy seems good. Well, the summer before that, when I had surgery and did PT for 3 months, guys, I realized I do not want this life. I don't want to work with grandma over there who was in a car accident and has to come to fulfill all her physical therapy sessions in order to win her court case. I don't want to work with unmotivated people. This is slow. People with low pain tolerances. I hated every second of it. This is too slow. I don't think I could do this the rest of my life. So I wasn't really sure what I was going to do. I entertained becoming a nurse. My junior year, I met who's now my wife. Her name is Connor. She was at the University of Alabama, which was only about 45 minutes away. We met through mutual friends. We started dating my junior year. And then that summer, in order to graduate on time, I needed an internship. And our internship was 12 credit hours. It's like a full semester. So that summer, I decided to do that. And I sat in my counselor's office. Then again, guys, I had no idea what strength conditioning was. At Montevallo, we didn't have a strength coach. We kind of had the rec center, and we would have off-season workouts where they would give us a sheet of paper, and we would do our squats and machine presses and calf raises and forearm curls, and that's it. And then the season came, you didn't lift. Had no idea what a strength coach even was. Never seen one. Didn't even really know it existed. Had no idea. So I needed to intern somewhere, and I was just like, I just need to get this over with. And I sat in my advisor's office, and my advisor said, well, here's some options that we have, some contacts we have, but here's one that could pay you. And I was like, ooh, make money. Yes, would love to. What is it? They said, it's a small boutique gym in Mountain Brook, Alabama, which is about 40 minutes away, called Total Fitness Consultants. Here's the owner's name, David. Send him your resume and tell him you'd like to interview. So I did. Went and interviewed and said, okay, we'd love to have you. We can pay you X. I think it was like $13 an hour. We'll end up building you a client base that's, small. We'll show you the ropes, and you'll help us out a lot as far as keeping everything clean. And on top of that, I'll also train you to get ready for your senior year. And he was a CSCS as well. He owned the gym. It was a really small gym, very wealthy area of Alabama that it was in. So a lot of housewives and high executives train there. It's a really cool environment. And I actually got to live there with a buddy of mine who lived in the area. So I lived there for the summer and really started to catch a knack for coaching. I didn't really find anything I really liked to do until then, and got really good at it. So I kind of had a natural gift for communicating and training. I started to, I had the bug for training anyway. I loved it. you know, I was there from 6 a.m. to 4 p.m. every day. And then I'd work out myself and go home and repeat it. Is what I would do for 3 months in the summer to get my internship, make a little bit of money. And David pulled me aside one day and said, "Hey man, like, you ever thought about doing this for a living?" And I was like, "What do you mean? Like personal training?" And he's like, "Well, yeah, but like being a strength coach, you're an athlete, right?" And I was like, "Strength coach, what do you mean?" And I was like, you know, because I got my CPT certification that summer as the NSCA certified personal trainer. And he was like, "You notice like I have my CSCS, that's the certified strength and conditioning specialist certification. And you can train athletes full time for universities." And I was like, "Really?" He's like, "I only have one in Montevallo." And he's like, "Yeah, that's ridiculous because you really need one." And they still don't have one. And hopefully they make that happen eventually. But he put me in touch with some people at UAB. I had a good conversation with Coach Blake Klotz at the time there, Stacy Torman. And I just started like, all right, this is what I want to do. Like, I started researching it. And I was like, yes, 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 strength coach. This is it. This is it. Love it. I want to do this. This is amazing. You can wear shorts every day and work out and train and do it for a living for and be around athletes. This is it. This is my dream job. So I just went and ran with it. Started just going after it and was like, all right, what do I got to do? Okay, I got to be a graduate assistant. Got to be able to afford to live. Then I could be a full-time. And then, boom, there's my path. And told my coaches about it, like my pitching coach, this is what I want to do. And he was like, dude, that's great. He's like, actually, I got a contact. My first cousin is the internship director for Mississippi State football. He's a strength coach on staff. We should get you in touch. It's like, really? All right. Awesome. Let's do it. And got in touch with Coach Achenberger and went over and interviewed. And he told me something that really kind of knocked me on my back. And I didn't realize what it took. He said, look, I'm going to be honest with you. If you want to do this, this is what, cause I was asking questions like, I need a part-time job. Like if I'm going to intern, I got to make money. Like what's the hours like? And he was like, Cody, you don't have time for a job. It's full time and you don't get paid. And I was like, well, I can't do it. Like, how am I going to live? I don't have enough money saved up to do that and move to Starkville, Mississippi. And I'm scared to death to ask my parents about it. Well, I finally irked up the courage because I really wanted to do it and said, Dad, Mom, like, I want to be a strength conditioning coach. But in order to do this, this is the path that they told me. You have to intern. You have to network and eventually become a graduate assistant. And as you're a graduate assistant, you eventually will get enough experience for somebody to hire you full time. And that's how it works. They said, well, what do you got to do? And I was like, well, Mississippi State said I could intern for them, but I'd have to move there and live there for 3 months and for the summer and then possibly stay for the fall too if I didn't have anything by then and intern. And my dad and mom said, okay, let's do it. We'll support you. So I had a support system from the very get-go to be a strength coach. And I was still dating my girlfriend at the time, and she was still at Alabama. She had graduated a semester before I did. So I decided to rock and roll with it, started looking for apartments, got in touch with other interns, got to where we could afford it. My dad kind of gave me a monthly allowance of budget of like, all right, this is what you got to live with. Right, here's your intro to life of learning how to pay bills. And very supportive, very thankful for that. And my wife, well, my girlfriend at the time, she was still in touch. She graduated December 2015, decided to stay on and become a full-time preschool teacher while she was working there. I moved to Starkville after I graduated in May. So she just stuck around in Tuscaloosa. And she graduated as a social worker, and she was just kind of waiting on what I was going to do. Like, what are you doing? Okay, you're there, but what's the next step for you? And we'll go from there. And I was really, you know, at that point, I was looking for engagement rings because I really wanted to ask her to marry me. And going to Starkville and not having a paycheck, right, makes a lot of sense. But moved to Starkville in May, right after I graduated, and our senior season was over. We lost in a conference tournament and, you know, didn't make the regional and moved on, graduated my degree, took the CSCS and failed, which sucked by like 3 points right before I went because I wanted to take it right as I graduated and went in there to went to Starkville and got to work. And man, I tell you what. So Starkville was only about an hour and 15 from Tuscaloosa where my girlfriend was. So it really worked out. Like I could still be close to her and I could do what I wanted to do. I was in SEC football country, man. It was unbelievable. I remember showing up, going into the Leo Seal complex and seeing all the stuff in the 12,000 square foot weight room. And I was like, yes, yes, yes. And I told myself, I was like, all right, you're here for a reason. You got to separate yourself. Like you got to put in work more than anything. You've got to do everything. You've got to separate yourself because there's six other interns in this same room as you. And how are you going to impress these coaches to make sure they will sign off on your name to get your next spot? And I was not there for anything else, not there to make friends. I was there to get better. And that was my life. I think we worked like 47 days straight. You know, we're in the weight room 4:50 a.m. sometimes. And we're doing all kind of stuff that is really hard. That internship was hard. I was dead tired. The first day that we were there, Coach Savage, who's at Florida now because he's Dan Mullen's strength coach, was Dan Mullen's strength coach at Mississippi State as well. The way he liked his room set up was very, very specific because they had their racks already in the spot that they kept, but he would move his machines. So his machines included where the dumbbells were, where they had a Rogers pendulum ISO row. They had same thing with like a lat pull down, neck machines, and hip presses. And he wanted his flow of his weight room set up specific for whatever cycle they were in. And interns would do all that work. They give you a pallet jack and you move all this weight and you set the room up the way he says. And it took about 12 hours of moving all that heavy weight. And honestly, it's almost like that first chance. I was like, hey, I'm going to outwork everybody. I'm going to be the one to pick up the 100-pound plate, not the one that tries to look around and see who else is going to pick it up. And that summer was really successful for me. I started getting a little more responsibility, especially for they would track numbers at the rack, and then they would combine all the numbers. You had five full-time strength coaches there. You would rotate from coach to coach. Week after week. So you got a chance to work with every coach and see their different coaching styles. And one coach I really drew close to was Coach Riley Allen. And Riley and I are still close to this day. And I've never really asked him why, and I need to, and he'll be on this podcast eventually. When I get a chance to do it in person, cause I really want to do that one in person. But Riley was kind of their sports science guy. Did a lot of the data collection, and I would head that up, and they would trust me to make sure all that was right for data entry. And Riley kind of took me under his wing and started educating me a little more. Cause my internship experience at Mississippi State was more about learning how to work and learning how to coach, not learning how to program, which is a good thing. I mean, it wasn't bad. It was a really good experience. Learning how to coach, understanding flow, positioning, and then just small things here and there. And if you ask questions, they would answer it. Other than that, you really didn't bother the full-time guys. And you never bothered the head strength coach. Unless Coach Savage wanted something from you, you didn't bother him because he was too busy. And he actually ended up being kind of the opposite of that, of, man, that I could call him right now and he would talk to me. And I was an intern for him in 2016, you know, 5 years ago. For 3 months, you know, so really good experience. Riley started teaching me a little bit about programming. One of the parts of the internship that was important was that they gave us, all right, here's your weight room with this resources. Here's your team. Write an off-season program. We had to defend it. Started to teach us a little bit about that. But at the meantime, even though I was really focused on being there, I was focused on my next step too. And I adopted that mentality much longer than that, unfortunately. I was like applying for every GA position that existed. It's like, all right, now I'm an intern. Okay, now GA, 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 apply, 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 get my resume together. Boom, boom, boom. Looking good. Asking, hey, you know, any GA, I want to be a GA. And they understand like that's what you want to do. But like, man, I'd had 3 months of coaching experience, period. Didn't even have a strength coach in college. I didn't play big time football where you got to experience a really good strength coach. I didn't get any of that and thought that I would be, you know, now I didn't even have my CSCS either. And I thought, if I just pass my CSCS, I'll finally be able to get hired. Cause a couple of the interns that were there already had it and I had to retake it. And if you fail it, you have to wait 6 months until you can take it again. So from there, I just, you know, called a couple guys here and there. Riley made some calls for me. And then one day, Coach Nate Peoples, who's an unbelievable coach, walked in and pulled me and TJ, my roommate, who was probably, I think that we were the two best interns there, in my opinion, and said, all right, you two, in my office. Okay, he said, all right, we've got a GA position open at the University of West Alabama to work for one of the guys I used to work with named Joseph Boyd. It's a first time ever GA. It's a Division II school in Livingston, Alabama. It comes with small stipend, master's paid for, and you would be the first ever GA, so you'd be pretty much like a full-time coach, but with GA pay. Are any of you guys interested? And TJ said, no. TJ's a little older than me, but I said, yes, I'm interested, but I don't know a whole lot about it. I mean, I played against him in college and talked to Riley about it, and Riley gave me some great advice. He said, look, it's not a bad opportunity, right? But understand that once you go like a D2 experience, your networking is so important. Just understand it's going to be tough to get if where you want to get one day, which is if you want to be a high-level strength coach, like at this level, just understand that it'll be hard to make the climb up. And I had to think about that, and I was actually in the process. I already had my engagement ring, getting ready to ask my girlfriend to marry me, and Livingston was only 45 minutes from Tuscaloosa. Unfortunately, that was a huge way for me to stay close to who was about to be my fiance. And went down and interviewed with Coach Boyd, and I was like, I don't know. It's kind of like, I'm coming from Mississippi State. This is a dump. I don't know if I want to do this, but I was like, man, it's a free master's degree. Like, and he wanted to hire me, and even without my CSCS, you know, it's fine. I was like, you have Coach Peoples who spoke really highly of you, and I trust him. That was my first experience with that. Like, I really trust him. If he puts his stamp on you, then I'm willing to hire you. You know, you'd be responsible for baseball, volleyball, men's and women's basketball, and assist women football. And we'd go from there. And understand, guys, Livingston, Alabama is the middle of nowhere. Talking 40 minutes from the nearest Walmart, two gas stations, a small grocery store, and then the university. Like, there's literally nothing there. Like, middle of nowhere next to the poorest county in Alabama. And the only thing we knew about West Alabama at the time was Malcolm Butler, you know, from the Patriots, and that they had a decent football program. Well, go and interview, takes me to lunch and everything. We talk about it. And I decide, you know what? Yes, I'm going to take this job because it's a master's. And plus, West Alabama is also known for one of the best online master's degrees. And I thought, well, you know, this is the GA. It's just short term. And then when I get my full-time position, I can finish my master's online because it's one of the best online platforms that you can get your master's through. So, and the master's was going to be a physical education master's with a sports management emphasis. I was like, oh, it's fine. It's whatever. Like, I didn't really care at that point. I just wanted to coach. So I accepted it. In August. Is that right? Yeah. In August. In July. And then July 31st, 2016, I planned my surprise in Tuscaloosa and asked my girlfriend at the time, Connor, to marry me at the footsteps of Bryant Denny Stadium. Really cool. We got a really cool picture of that. She became my fiance, and we started wedding planning. Well, I moved to Livingston. I remember I packed all my stuff. Now I'm just one guy, right? I've barely got anything. And they're like, we need you here by this date. And I was like, well, where am I going to live? And Coach Boyd was like, we'll figure it out. I was like, figure it out? What do you mean? Like I need an apartment. Like, I got to figure out where I'm going to live. Like, I know my stipend is this. My parents are going to help me with this. This is what I've got to live. I don't know where about it. We'll just figure it out. And I remember I was driving to Livingston, not knowing where I was going to live. And Coach Boyd eventually said, hey, the assistant volleyball coach, Rob, needs a roommate. You can just live with him. It's going to cost you this. I was like, okay, that'll work. Where does he live? And then we showed up, and it was what we called the hen den. And the hen den was called the hen den because it was surrounded with chicken wire and as a fence, and had concrete floors, and it was nasty, and there were rats. But guys, moving in with Robert Chilcote was one of the best decisions I ever made in my life. I met Rob in August of 2016. We started to plan our wedding, and we set a date for April 17th, 2017. And by the time it was time to plan everything, Rob was in my wedding. That's how close we became. And we're still super close friends. And he's actually the recruiting coordinator for Brown in the Ivy League for volleyball now. But that's what happened the day I moved into Livingston, Alabama. Wasn't sure what to expect and what I was getting into. Had no idea. All I know is I wanted to coach, and I was super fired up, man. I came out of Mississippi State fired up because I saw one of the best strength coaches in the game do it. I've never, still to this day, never seen a coach inspire people the way Nick Savage did, and how he always had a message for his team, and he was always high energy, and he always loved on the guys, and I took a lot of that. And, you know, as an early coach, you adopt what you see and take it with you into and kind of copy early until you figure out what to do. You know, I was very green. I went from being an undergraduate student, graduating undergrad, failed my CSCS, and 3 months later, guys, I am a graduate assistant strength coach at the University of West Alabama, responsible for solely programming volleyball, baseball, men's and women's basketball, and then helping with football. That can be dangerous. I mean, it can be very dangerous. And I wasn't sure what I did, and I kind of just copied what I saw at Mississippi State, not verbatim, but like concepts, and didn't realize at the moment, but Coach Boyd, him and I are really close to this day, really mentored me on how to coach, really mentored me and taught me how to program, and showed me how to get the job done with just nuts and bolts, man. You want to talk about, I went from a 12,000 square foot weight room, all toys you can think of, specialty bars, room, turf on the outside. Go to West Alabama, and all we have is some crusty barbells, half racks, some bumper plates, and that's it. No dumbbells, no bands. That's all we had. You know, and Coach Boyd decided to implement a fully Olympic weightlifting system for sports performance. And I came from Mississippi State where they didn't do that. They did zero Olympic lifting. So no cleans, no jerks, no snatches. It was all squat deadlift based and a lot of accessory work with neck, hip pressing for the legs, rowing, a lot of other stuff that they did. And then they also did a lot of work outside with their sprint work and sled pushing and stuff like that, med ball throwing. That's what they decided to do. And I didn't really know how to coach to clean that well. I tried to clean in college because it looked cool and got to where I could clean 300, you know, pretty crappily. But once he started coaching me on how to do it, the first thing I did was I went and worked out with him one morning. And he took me through progressions on how he coached it, how I should copy that. And man, talk about teaching the Olympic lifts quickly. That's why I firmly believe that it doesn't take a ton of time to get Olympic lifts good enough to train. And the way he showed me was what I still use to this day on how to coach it. And we use that strictly, you know, and days in Livingston, Alabama were long, but a ton of fun. When you're in a small town like that, you know, I lived with Rob. He had a full schedule. I had a full schedule. I'm training teams from 6 a.m. all the way through the evening. We're going to class. I got grad classes. But the athletic department really comes together and become friends. Everybody hangs out with everybody. They ain't got nowhere else to go, right? There ain't nothing to do. And I got really close with a couple of sport coaches, including the volleyball coaching staff, the baseball staff, and the football staff as well. Our staff, we got to hire another GA while I was there. We hired a guy named Nick Olmedi, who was just recently at Wofford, but just took a tactical strength and conditioning job. Still a close friend of mine, somebody who is really excellent at what he does. And I didn't realize it at the time, but the experiences there really shaped me. And we complained all the time because, like, we don't have much, and we barely have a restaurant in town. Like, there was a restaurant on Friday mornings. The strength staff, all three of us, would go to Dandy Don's, little breakfast spot, hole in the wall, greasy place, and we would just have our staff meetings there and hang out and, you know, shoot the bull and try to find ways to better our athletes. And it was a lot of fun. And even then, while I was in Livingston, I still was trying to look to the next stop. I wasn't very good at being 10 toes down where I was at. I was, all right, now I'm a GA, got to get a full-time spot. Now, there was a little more pressure on me there because we'd set a wedding date, April 17th. Okay, it's August, September, you know, and my first thought was, all right, I've got 9 months to get a full-time job because I'm not going to take my fiance's hand in marriage on $800 a month. I was like, this can't happen. I don't know. She's going to move here to the middle of nowhere and work where? Like, what are we going to do? And I had no idea. And I knew I had to prepare myself for that. And I was still throwing resumes like crazy. And I really regret that because I look back on my time at West Alabama and really, really enjoyed it. Got to see some really cool things. The volleyball team went from being really terrible to turning around and getting into the conference tournament for a long time. Since like, you know, it had been pretty bad for a while. I saw a baseball team was one win away from going to the College World Series. It was really cool. Our football team was pretty good. We had a good off season when I was there. And after I left, which I'll say in a minute, they went on to winning a conference championship and they got put out in the third round by the eventual national champion, West Florida. But it was such a good time, man. It was, and we didn't have much. There was one office. It was the size of a closet. They crammed two desks in there. And then when we had three coaches, we had this old chocolate milk machine that the cafeteria lended us and let us have for post-workout chocolate milk. And in order for us to get the cups, there was always a cup box in the office. And the third assistant's desk was the cup box. And we used to always joke like, yeah, buddy, you stay on that cup box. Like, cup box is where you belong. And then when I left and Nick took over as the second assistant or the first assistant in first GA, and he's like, thank goodness I get to get off that cup box. It's still a joke that we tell to this day when we see each other. And it wasn't much, but we had a blast and we did our jobs. We did really well. And people will even say like they missed after we left, Joe's not even there anymore. He's a tactical strength coach as well up in North Carolina. But the times we had there was awesome. And it was hard, long days. You didn't have many resources, but we had a ton of fun. And I made some of my best friends in the world, including Robert Chilcote, who was the assistant volleyball coach. Me and him got really close while we were there. Fast forward, you know, after the semester turned, go back to West Alabama, going to start my second semester as a coach, and I'm still throwing resumes like, wedding day's coming. Wedding day's coming. Got to a point. I was like, I guess nothing's going to hit. So I decided to move out of Rob's apartment and get my own spot, kind of like a townhome ish. Well, what you would think a townhome is in this little country town. Tripled my rent because, man, I was living by myself in a 2-bedroom little town, quote unquote townhome, where I fully anticipated that me and my wife would live. And she would move in with me there and we would just figure it out. And just like a lot of other people do. And come March, I got a hit back after I'd applied to a bunch of places. I simply saw a posting on NCAA Market to McNeese State University in Louisiana, just a full time. I was at that point, I didn't even see what the school's name was, man. I was full time. Okay, send application, apply. Boom, boom, boom. Full time. Oh, yeah, do it. No research, nothing. Desperate. And they called me for a Skype interview, and I was like, oh, man, like this is my shot. So I over-prepared. I crushed the interview. They called me back. Hey, we want to come. We want to bring you down. We'll get you a rental car. You come down for the interview. We'll get you a hotel for an in-person interview. Like, I'm this close to being a full-time strength coach, and this is Division I level, too. It's a big deal. This is the associate director position. So I go down. I drive all the way down. It's probably about a 12 and a half hour drive. I get my hotel, take my suit with me, and I went for the interview. And one thing I realized while I was there is that the guy I was about to work for, I felt like this guy is a Looney Tune. Like, this guy has no idea what he's like. Do I really want to work for this guy? Like, what I'm leaving, this guy is really good and one of my biggest mentors, and I'm about to go work for this guy. And then, and I kept thinking, no, it's full-time money. You got to do it. You got to do it for your family, even if it is in Southwest Louisiana. And we interviewed. I interviewed well with coaches and did the whole thing. Went to dinner with the head strength coach that night. Thought it was good, and drove back. And by the time I drove back, I got a call and said that, hey, we'd like to officially offer you the position. And I called Rob immediately, and Rob answered the phone, and Rob was so stoked for me. You know, he loved the fact that I was going to get that spot. I even signed a lease to live in Livingston and with my wife, and called my fiance and was like, hey, I've got the job. Like, we're moving to Louisiana. And she's like, awesome. And I got to, that was April at the time, almost getting ready to wedding. I was like, hey, can I go on my wedding and go on my honeymoon? And then we come down and I start in May. And they were like, yes, that's fine. So as soon as I got back to, you know, I went straight to Rob's place. Rob had a celebratory drink waiting for me, super stoked for me. And it was a big deal for me because I was like, all right, finally a full-time job. I'm going to the Division I level. I'm climbing the ladder as I've projected from the very beginning. This is working. This is awesome. I can finish my master's online. No big deal. I won't miss a beat on that. And we'll go from there. So tell Coach Boyd I got the job. Coach Boyd is ecstatic for me as well. Knows that was the journey I wanted to take anyway as a GA. And April comes around, say goodbye to my teams. And it hit right then and there. Like, the volleyball team threw a party for me. I'm looking at it in my office right now. They have a volleyball that has a message from every player on that team. They gave me a picture of their team. They even gave me a whistle in a box. It's a silver whistle in a box that's with an engraving on it that says, thank you so much for helping us get where we need to go. And that stays in my office to this day. The first team I ever coached, I poured my heart and soul into, made some really good connections and some really good just relationships. And they gave me that. And I thought that was so heartfelt, and I'll never forget that. And I kind of realized, man, I'm already leaving. I'm already going to miss this place. But I'm going for a reason. This is just part of the journey. Well, my wife and I get married. In April. And I, you know what? Sorry. 2017 is the year we got married. We got married on April 22nd. If I said April 17, it's because part of my passwords on a lot of things have April 17 because of the month and year. April 22nd is the day we got married. So if my wife's listening to this, I'm probably going to get in trouble for messing that up. I promise you I don't mess it up on the day. We get married on April 22nd. And we go on our honeymoon. We fly to St. Lucia, spend a week there. Amazing time. And then we get back. And the first thing we do is we get off the plane in Huntsville. Her parents live in Huntsville. We got our stuff. I rented a U-Haul from a U-Haul place locally. We drove to Tuscaloosa, got her stuff, drove to Livingston, packed my stuff, stayed the night, and then the next morning we booked it to Lake Charles, Louisiana, and we'd already put a deposit down on a rental house blindly, just wanting a place to live. And there we go, starting our lives together. And this was the beginning, and this is where things really get serious, because we moved 12 hours away from any family, no familiarity. Connor and I have been in a long distance relationship from the jump. Now long distance is 45 minutes, but still, first time living together ever. We got a rental house together. We put the house together. I start coaching in May. I go to the coaching conference, come back, and then we start summer training. And part of it was that the guy I was going to work for that I didn't really believe in, actually, I don't know if he got let go or resigned or what, but I got a phone call saying he was no longer with the program. And as you guys know, in strength conditioning, like if the head strength coach is gone, if a new head guy comes in, he's got full jurisdiction to bring on somebody else if the admin gives him the go ahead. Well, this is where I got panicky, and I was like, holy cow, I've like signed a lease on this house. We're here. We moved all our stuff. We spent all this money, and now the head strength coach got fired, and I might not have a job. Well, it turns out they decided to keep me, and they hired a new guy by the name of Ben Souders, who has also had a huge role in my development as a coach. He got hired from Georgia Tech. He played football at Western Kentucky. He was very much a football guy. He's been around big time football. He understood big time football, and watching him just interact with players and develop relationships is where I learned a lot there. And man, I had no idea what I had what I was getting into. Southwest Louisiana, you've got Cajun country, you've got totally different atmosphere. The food is amazing. The people are so much different than where I'm from. And we end up putting a staff together of four guys on our strength staff, and we're doing summer training, and I'm just loving it. It's so much fun. I'm tired, but it's amazing. I feel like I'm really a part of a staff. Like I'm a D1 strength coach. This is it. And all the while, my wife's looking for a job, trying to use her social work degree. She finds a job at a place, and guys, the horror stories that I could tell you of what she did for this company. She was a social worker. She would go make visits to assess people for like what type of things they would get, things they need. And in Cajun country in the backwoods of Louisiana, man, there's some stories you wouldn't believe. Like one of the stories is she went to a house in the middle of the country where the two boys that qualified for services were 20 years old, grown men, autistic, and had sensory issues to where they could not wear clothing. They wouldn't wear clothing. And you can see what that leads to, almost animal-like. And these grown men were not really in control, and that she was scared for her own well-being. And at that point, I was like, I can't let you do that. And that scared me. And as we're going through the year, good summer, we start the football season, I didn't realize what my schedule would look like. And it looked like this. Okay, Monday, we're in the weight room, 5 a.m., set up, 6 a.m. lift. Okay, 7 a.m. group, 8:30 group, whatever, couple hours blocks in the middle, afternoon groups, practice. I've got my volleyball at McNeese. I was in charge of volleyball, softball, baseball, and help with football. Also ran the internship program. And having all those groups throughout the day, going to football practice, having baseball, like to train in the evening in the off season. So we did that. And then obviously during football season, all the strength coaches traveled. So on Friday, if we traveled on an away game, we'd get ready to do that. And McNeese strength coaches drive the equipment bus, and or we would drive a van, and we would go across wherever we go and stay the night, the Friday night, whether it's in Dallas, Texas, whether it's in New Orleans, whether it's in North Louisiana, whether it's in Arkansas, Texas, wherever we're playing, stay the night. Next night we'd play at 7 p.m. on a Saturday night. We'd pack everything up and drive through the night, taking turns. And I'd get home sometimes Sunday mornings from 3 a.m. to 9 a.m., depending on where we go. If we were traveling from Abilene, Texas, all the way across the state, I got home when the sun was back up and sleep a little bit, maybe hang out for a minute. We're back in the field house at 3 p.m. to train the red shirts. And 7 days a week. If it's a home game, you get lucky. You don't travel on Friday nights. You got the game. We're in. We have a 7 p.m. game. We're in at 11 a.m. Doing things for the guys, getting ready for meals, all this stuff. Got the game that night. Try to eat late that night. Come back up Sunday, train the red shirts. We did that the entire season. And I get that that's the norm, and that's completely on my – it's my fault for not being prepared for that. And it hit me hard because, like, I'd come home exhausted, having nothing left from my newly married wife, who's having a hard time at work. We're trying to figure out how to live with each other. We're brand new, and things are not easy, you know, and we go through it. And about October, November, I just start questioning, like, is this really worth it? Like, do I have to live this way for how long until I get my break to get where I need to get, where I can, because we always wanted a family. That's why we got married. And I was just like, I can't keep doing this. I can't. I even had Ben Souders had gotten ready to interview for a job at Georgia, which he's at now. He even resigned and got the job at Georgia. I could have stayed and been probably had a chance to be the head strength coach for a Division I program. And I just said no more. I wanted to chase something different. And guys, it had nothing to do with my wife. My wife was there and was ready to ride or die no matter what we did. She wasn't pushing me, nagging me, none of that. I made this decision. So I'm looking around and had a couple interviews, had an interview with the spring training and minor league position with the Cleveland Indians. Didn't get it. Had an opportunity to seek out an interview with Southern Miss Baseball to be their baseball only guy. Didn't get that either. And then I got an opportunity to move to Colorado to do some private sector training. And it's from a guy that I had met before. I knew, felt like I trusted. He was going to be the overall seer of the facility. I was going to be his director of sports performance. And we had an investor that was going to put up the money to, cause he was an investor, wanted to do it. And, that started to put up the money for the company or, you know, for the facility. It was a franchise. And it was an all one-stop shop where you get skills training, speed training, and strength and conditioning all in one, which I thought was really cool. And being able to move to Colorado sounded like a dream. Connor and I have always wanted to do something like that if an opportunity came to do that. And we decided to take it. So we paid all this money to break our lease, move, ship our house to Colorado, move into an apartment. And this is a real hard life lesson I had to learn. Went from living in a 3-bedroom rental house in Louisiana for $1,200 a month and moved into a 600 square foot apartment in Colorado, which was high scale. I mean, it wasn't in Denver. It was about 25 miles north, but we were downtown in the town we were in. And it was nice. Like, it was nice. I can see why it costs what it costs, but $1,700 a month for 600 square foot 1-bedroom apartment is tough. But we love that apartment. It was just us, so it didn't really matter. And I started working for this company, and she found a job quickly and one that she really adored. And life was good. Okay, we're enjoying life in Colorado. Well, it got to a point where the facility wasn't open yet, and we were still building it, and I was getting paid for it, and finally had our grand opening, and then eventually things went south quick. The investor, the owner, decided he wanted to turn it into his gym, and he was a military background guy who really only knew one way and decided that, nope, I'm going to do this my way. And I saw him make an 8-year-old puke. And at that moment, I had an ethics decision to make, and I was like, I can't do this. Like, I can't support this. Tried to stand up, have a conversation. Wasn't happening. The guy I went to work for, the guy that overseeing the training, Ryan took off his hoodie and dropped it on his desk and walked out himself. And when he did that, I thought, oh no, this is not going to last. Like, I can't work here. Like, I can't do this. This is not good for kids. It's a youth athletic training center that trained anywhere from ages 8 to 18. And it was not okay. It was not good. And it was against everything I believed in. I was handcuffed, and it was almost like it was set up to be a money grab. And I really, really didn't agree with it. And I took a chance, and I did something pretty stupid. And I quit that job without having something lined up. And guys, bills have to be paid. I mean, we're on our own. We're doing our thing. My wife's got a job, but it was going to be tough. And she supported me from day one of that. which is crazy. I made that decision. Like, I'm done. I'm out. And I started scrambling. You know, I made a couple of connections in Denver, started training some hockey teams just to make ends meet. And I wasn't sure what the next step was. I interviewed for like a part-time fellowship at Denver University. I tried to interview for an intern, paid internship at Colorado Boulder. I was like, I'm going to go back to being an intern again. Like, I was a Division I associate director, and I have to go intern again? Like, this can't be real. This is what I'm doing? How am I going to raise my family? Like, it was at that moment I started questioning, I may have to get out of coaching, but I don't want to. And so I just started looking for odds and end jobs, and I actually found a job listing in Colorado for a milk delivery driver. And you wonder, what is that? Well, in Colorado, they still have these factories and these places that literally will deliver you bottled, like glass bottled cold milk at 5 a.m. or in the morning. It'll be at your doorstep and you have a route. And obviously you needed to be somewhat physically fit. And the fact that I had strength and conditioning coach on my resume, the guy called me back immediately and was like, you're the perfect fit. Come and interview for tomorrow. And it was everything, man. It was more money than I was making at the other place. You would have worked 4 days a week, night shift. You know, you had your route. It wasn't anything crazy on the job training. And I was like, this is what I'm about to do. Like, no shame in that. That's fine. But like, I would have definitely done it. And I wasn't sure what was coming next. And I happened to see a posting on Instagram of a guy who was a high school strength coach back in Alabama who announced he was leaving. And I was like, oh, that place is, I'm in Alabama where I'm from. Like, that place is known to be a great school. Like, I'm going to ask, like, hey, do you know what the hiring process looks like? And he was like, I don't, but I do know who's heading up the search. It's Fred Eves. I said, okay. Had a connection with Fred, sent my resume to Fred, and hoping, man, I just hope I get a kick. I hope I get a kick back. And I'm haven't quite started the milk delivery job yet. And it's about, you know, we moved to Colorado in January of 2018. I worked at that private sports facility that I'm not going to name because they don't deserve the attention until about March. And then April is when this started to happen. And I was still training the hockey teams here and there in downtown Denver just for some extra, you know, just to make ends meet. And I finally get an email back, and I get a call from the principal at this school called Madison Academy. And, hey, Cody, we're interested. I know we'd love to have more conversation. We continued conversation. Like, hey, we'd love for you to come for an interview. And I was like, when do I book my flight? Like, when do I book my flight? Because I'm going. Like, I'm about to – like, I've never had – and I was like, I've never had an interview that I interviewed in person for yet so far that I haven't been offered the job. Like, you know, there's been interviews I've been turned down. I didn't get a chance to go in person, but I was like, if I'm going to go in person, I'm not going to miss. This is my career on the line. So I booked my flight, went, crushed the interview, come back, get a call about a week later saying, we want to offer you the job. And I was ecstatic. Telling my wife, I got the job. Like, we're going back to Alabama. And I never for once thought about how my wife was or what she thought. She was like, man, I love my job here. I love it here. We're going to move again. I was like, holy crap. But originally my thought was, you know, like, you have a job. I have a career. One of the worst mistakes I'd ever make saying that. Like, you know what you signed up for when you married me. Don't ever say that either. Horrible thing to say. And like the great person she is, she's just like, all right, well, what do we get? What's it going to take? Then I started crunching numbers. And another life lesson of understanding how much life truly costs. And this is where things really hit me of like this whole chasing the rat race. This has to be good. Like, we're taking this job because it's a home run. It's better than any job I've ever had. It's a place for us to have a family. And started crunching numbers on how we're going to get there. Okay, this is May. They want me to start like May 18th. We need to be, you know, we need to find a place to live. How are we going to get out of this lease? How much is it going to cost for us to move? How many days is it going to take for us to move? How, you know, when are you going to get paid? And started crunching numbers, and this is what it came out to. And it blew my mind. You know, 2 months rent to break the lease, $1,700, $3,400 just to break the lease. U-Haul, okay, packing supplies, okay, hiring people to help pack the truck, okay, $2,000. Gas for the U-Haul, hotels, being able to eat for 3 days as it took us 3 days to get there because we're driving a U-Haul, towing my truck. She's driving her car. We adopted a dog while we were out there, so we had a dog. You know, you're looking already over $5,000. A deposit down on a house to rent because we wanted a house. We did not want to live in an apartment again. That's another $1,300. And then there we are, moved in, deposit, you got to pay rent, $1,300 again. And then they told me, like, because of our pay system, like, you won't get your money, you won't get paid for until next pay period. So you'll get your money from what you worked. It'll be like a month and a half's worth of check, but you won't get paid till this time. So we had to find a way to live for a month and a half. And guys, we were definitely in the red. We didn't have anything. We had some help, but we definitely had to borrow money in order to do it. And that's like, and my birthday passed during that time, June 12th, this time almost, was that? That was 2018, 3 years ago, where it was my birthday and like we could barely buy myself a 99 cent like Jell-O packet from Walmart and be okay with it to celebrate my birthday. And we went over to Connor's parents' house, which is about 45 minutes away, and they cooked for us. And I told myself, never again, never again. I'm putting my family at risk for my own career. So I was like, I'm here to stay. I'm not going anywhere. I'm not doing anything. I'm 10 toes down. For the first time ever, I am 10 toes down. And we lived in the rental house and things were good, but things still weren't great because like I was still, you know, she was trying to find a job again, and we're just kind of repeating the process. And it, she finally found a job, thankful to network at Madison Academy, helping her out. And the job was once again horrible. Horrible. I mean, the people, the way they treated her, the way the organization was ran, it was miserable. She found another job, it was better. But then we get pregnant and we're expecting a child, and we were not planning for this child, or we weren't preventing either. And we knew if it happened, we wanted a family, and she got pregnant and she struggled with pregnancy. It was tough on her. It really was. And we always wanted a house, and we always wanted to have our own spot, and we were renting and all this, and we're crunching numbers. And she's like, I want to be home with our child so bad. And I was like, I don't know if we can do that. And she said, okay. And she went back to work after she was, after we had, she had Beckham, my son, and it was miserable. And, you know, then the pandemic hit and things got crazy. You know, we're at home during the pandemic. She's trying to work from home. I'm working from home, trying to figure things out. And I really believe God blessed us a ton during this situation because we got back on our feet. We got in position and we had friends that were getting ready to build a new house. And we had always wanted to get into our own spot. We always wanted to own a house. I want to have our house. We've been here for a while. We know we're going to be here. Let's get our own spot. Well, we just couldn't find anything we could really afford, honestly. And we had some friends I was getting ready to build. So, and they were also pregnant with their first child. During that time, our son was already born at this time, you know, but they were pregnant with their first child, They were worried to death because the market was so hot because of the pandemic and everything. People were selling. People were buying quick, that if they sold their house, they wouldn't have anywhere to bring their baby home to. And that made total sense. And because their building process kept getting pushed back because of the pandemic. And Connor and I looked at each other and said, why don't we buy their house? I was like, yeah, let's talk to them about it. So we did. And we told them that, hey, well, we won't close until you guys, after you get your baby home. Gave us some leverage to get the price point we needed. We actually bought the house from them. They rented the house from us until they were got the baby home. Their house was finished. They could move out. And then we moved in last July. That was last July. Almost on a year now in our new house. And so we did that, and we made that move because we downsized and put it in a position to where my wife didn't have to go back to work. And I firmly believe God blessed us with that opportunity. And now, and she still hasn't. She stays home with our children and to our child. And I train athletes here at MA. And that's where I am today. You know, we've been here for a year now, and I know you've been listening here for almost 2 hours. But my journey in this life has really come full circle to what's my priority. At the end of the day, I go home to my family every single day, and they're the ones that are going to be there. And we've gone through some hardships of not having a whole lot of questioning things and what's our purpose. And one of the things I'm so thankful for is just being able to be in an environment like I am here at Madison Academy, of where I do things the way I want to do them. I have all the support in the world. I have time to be with my family, and we can still do things at a high level. And that's why I love my job so much, because I can do those things. I have time to bring stories to you like this, to add value to the field and coaches in other ways. You know, I'm not beat down hours wise to the point where I've got nothing left. Even to the point where just a couple months ago, I had a sleep study done and realized and got the results back that I have severe sleep apnea, to the point that, like, severe sleep apnea is considered having 30 or more events an hour. And an event is anything that either stops your breathing or brings you to a lighter mode of sleep. I was averaging 96 an hour, three times the severe category, to the point where I felt sleep deprived. I couldn't stay awake at night. And now I'm getting that question answered, taking care of my health, getting the CPAP machine that I need to help fix that, to the point where my wife was ready to kick me out of bed because I was snoring so loud. At the end of the day, guys, I tell this story of my life because I want you guys to know where I've come from, what I've dealt with, and where I'm going. You know, and I want you guys to reflect and reevaluate yourself of what's your priority. It doesn't matter whether you're a single guy, single girl, family man, family woman, you're married, you know, got a girlfriend, got children, no children. I urge you to reflect and reverse engineer of what you want out of your life, and then take steps towards that. Because once we started doing that in both our marriage, my career, how we wanted our life to look, everything got better. Didn't immediately. It took time. It took a lot of time to get there, but man, is it worth it. And I want you guys to know that I'm an open book. If you ever want to talk to me about anything, please reach out. Send me an email. Send me a DM. I'm down to talk. If there's anything that resonated with you that you want to talk about, that you want to hear about, you want me to expand on situations, if you want to talk X's and O's, you want to talk strength conditioning, talk about how to train athletes, I'm here to hear that too. You know, I'm here for all of it. And I want you guys to know that I am here to help you. I am here to help coaches. I am here to help as many people as I can possibly help, because I know that at one point, I know I was really struggling. And if it wasn't for some key people in my life, I probably would still be struggling. Now, needless to say, I still have a really long way to go, but I know where I'm headed. I know I'm heading in the right direction. I have it calculated that every step we take is going in the right direction. So I'm going to leave you guys with this. And I think that it's really important. And I didn't really share the spiritual side of me here. I don't want that to be a hindrance of you reaching out to me, because I do have a heavy religious side to me as far as being a Christ follower and such. Oh, excuse me. And leaving you with this is this verse that I read every day, is that James 1:4. It says, let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. And sometimes we got to persevere through things in order to grow, in order to get where, in my belief, where God wants us to be, and to develop into the human that we were built to be. Now, if that's not your belief, that's fine. We can still be friends. I promise. I've never forced that on anybody. Just try to live it, because that's what I believe in, and that's fine. But I want you guys to know me. And if you don't know that side of it, then you don't really know me. So if you ever need anything, please reach out. If you got any other questions, and then next week we'll be back on the strength and conditioning content. So you guys have a good weekend, and we'll catch you next week.